everyone, and welcome to another episode of Banking Matters. I'm your host, Lindsay Hughley, and joining me today is Duncan Taylor. Duncan is the SVP and Chief Operating Officer for Washington Bankers Association and serves as the President of Credit Career Works and WBA Professional Services Incorporated. He's a seasoned associated management professional and an experienced small business and not-for-profit technology consultant. He's a third-generation accidental banker, as both his mom and grandmother were had careers at Washington Mutual. Duncan grew up around the bank, and it left an indelible impression on him as an importance of work in the industry performs. Duncan's consulting background gives him a unique perspective and understanding and connecting the actions of an institution with the effects and impacts it has on its customers and stakeholders. He's also a bank data nerd and will happily discuss the ins and outs of any call report. Duncan has a breadth of teaching experience ranging from financial literacy education to capital budget details for Washington State school construction. His specialty is breaking down complex topics into digestible chunks. Duncan is a graduate of Pacific Coast Banking School, holds an ABA Bank Operations Diploma, and is also an alumnus of Highline College Political Science Program, Western Governors University Business Administration, and IT Management Program, and the Society for Nonprofit Leadership and Management Program at the Michigan State University. Welcome, Duncan. I'm so grateful to have you on our show today. How are you?
Oh, thank you so much for having me, and I'm thrilled to be here. That's how I am, excited and eager for our conversation today.
Yes, so am I. But before we jump in, we always like to hear from our guests. How did you get started with your career in financial institutions?
Sure. So as you so kindly read in my bio, I grew up around the bank, but I didn't actually plan to work in banking. I went into the high tech space out of college. I worked for three startups in a row, and the nature of startups being boom and bust, got laid off from three startups in a row. But the third experience, I got connected to a really, really smart and interesting person. Named Chris Kemp. You can look him up today. He's the CEO of Astra, a rocket company, but at the time he was running a tech firm, and he really encouraged me to branch out on my own and maybe think about running my own startup. So I did that for a couple of years in the mid 2000s in the social media space, and it crashed and burned and was a valuable learning experience. And I kind of got tired of the whole chasing the investor kind of vibe that is necessary in the startup space, and decided to work in not-for-profits. So that's what I did. And I began consulting on the side, in addition to working for a nonprofit full time. And one day I got an email from a colleague of mine that said, "Hey, do you want to work on a database project for these folks over at the Washington Bankers Association? They need a consultant." I said, "Sure." And that was April 2012. And I came aboard full-time January 2013 and have been here ever since. Absolutely love the organization. Fell in love with the industry accidentally, but am so thrilled to be part of this great business now.
That is awesome. And I know that just growing up, because the career fields that my dad has worked in, especially, like, I have a passion for that kind of stuff, but I was able to kind of mesh it with banking. And so I still call him when we have estates and wills and all of that kind of stuff. And so it is so nice to be able to grow up around all of the talk. I'm sure you did. And now to be able to bring that passion into especially a bank association, like, how cool.
Yeah. And, you know, my mom worked in check processing. So one of my earliest sense memories is the smell of Micker, you know, the magnetic ink at the base of a check, because, you know, when you have thousands and thousands of checks in a room, it has a very distinctive odor and kind of smells metallic. And she would take the checks and transfer them onto microfiche. Now, for any of the younger listeners out there who don't know what that is, back in the days before digital photography was common, you had these really, really large machines that basically took pictures and put onto a special type of film all of the check images. And that's how people looked up checks when they needed to go back and verify or do any of the information transfer that used to be very manual. So that's what my mom did. And I've got pictures from that time period of me taking a nap in a banker box lid while she's at work, because, you know, they had take your kid to work days all the time at what we just called the bank at Washington Mutual. In fact, I have a little piece of memorabilia that I want to share. This is a Washington Mutual piggy bank. And that's the sort of the family savings icon that they use. But I've got a ton of this, this really great WaMu stuff from all over, the bank's history, and, I cherish
it. That's awesome. That's given me hope. My youngest was, oh man, both of my youngest, they're 7 and 9 now. They both were able to come to work with me a day or two. That was before things kind of hit the fan, but still very sweet. They definitely become part of your whole family too, and just the whole process. And it's funny how they've just kind of taken it on just from the fact that that's my job and that's what I do. And I do talk to them about some of it, you know? So that's awesome that you still have these memorabilia, because they have a ton of stuff. And they're like, this is was mom's first bank. This was our second bank. So
that's great. I love it.
Yes, it is awesome. So, Duncan, I would really love to hear what your thoughts are on the what the future of our workforce looks like for the banking industry.
Yeah, definitely. So obviously we've seen a lot of transition and flux in the last decade and a half in the industry, right? Coming through the great financial crisis, that was a severe culling of a lot of roles that the industry took for granted for a really long time, and then suddenly found due to necessity that it had to do without. So there was a significant contraction in terms of the types of roles that we really saw a lot of effort and investment in hiring for, things like frontline staff in particular. And that's really never come back. I mean, even pre-pandemic, we didn't see a huge amount of growth in a lot of those sort of entry level frontline. In fact, we saw kind of the opposite trend, where there was a lot of effort and investment in upskilling those teller and frontline roles to be more universal bankers or personal bankers, right? So to sort of transition into that hybrid role where, yeah, you do the customer service, but you're also a banker and you're also doing some of those key banker actions and activities. And so as we think about what this new landscape looks like post COVID, you know, once again, there's been a culling, there's been a shrink in a lot of the types of roles that that we took for granted for a long time, and a heavy emphasis on upskilling into these newer sort of dynamic roles where you can be a lot more responsive to customers and community based on needs that arise in what can literally be real time, right? As we you know, engage in this recording, a huge hurricane has just swept through the southeastern part of the United States. And you look at institutions that are dramatically impacted, communities that have been wiped out completely. And even as our hearts go out to them, we think, okay, what will it take to rebuild? And it's going to take access to capital. And I think that central focus of understanding what access to capital truly means is really going to guide the workforce development in our industry over the decade to come. Having employees and a really well-informed workforce who actually understand the business of banking, I think that's becoming more and more critical. There's no longer room in our industry for heavy siloization, where it's just one specialty and you do one job and you kind of just put your nose to the grindstone and do that one thing for 30 years. I really do think those days are behind us. And I tell my team often, and I lament that this is the truth, but I do feel it is, I feel like all the easy days are behind us. I think that in a lot of ways, you know, where we are today, and I'm just being realistic, we have a lot of challenges that are not going to go away. They're going to grow. They're going to become more complicated. And so our industry is really going to have to think creatively. And frankly, that's not been a strength of the banking industry throughout our history. So I do think that it's going to take a fresh and unique perspective, one that is less tied to the past and more willing to approach things from, you know, really where customer and community expectations are today.
Yeah. And I, just speaking from my own personal experience, the departments that I have been, had the honor of kind of heading up, it's almost like they've opened up because of this shift of, oh, the banks have either gotten in trouble or they've finally realized this one person has been here for 30 years and we're doing things the same way. But it's taken new, fresh perspective to kind of shift things. Whereas I took a department of 5 people down to 3 and we were completely efficient. And so it is, the creativity is very hard for the banking industry. So I would really love to hear some ideas that you have that banks can do so that they can better prepare for this shift that does need to happen? Because I feel like there's so many people that realize it needs to happen. It's just what action steps do we take?
Absolutely. So I think one of the first things we need to do is have an honest self-examination as an industry about where we're acquiring our talent. Do we really need to pursue only college graduates? Because we know that there's a lot of roles in our industry that don't require a specific college degree. If they don't require a specific college degree, then do they really require any college degree? Should that be our focus? Are we using college as a litmus test for, you know, can you read, write, and articulate? I think there's probably better ways to do that than just saying a four-year degree is the baseline entry. So I think that's a starting point, you know, for our efforts in Washington and indeed with our fellow state associations around the country, we've invested heavily in workforce development focused on career technical education in high schools. So pursuing learners that want to work on our industry and frankly, better reflect our communities where we live, work, and serve than the workforce as it is today. And reaching into those communities, reaching into those schools and saying, hey, this is a career for you. Not only do we want you to consider this, but we want to give you the tools to be successful, to thrive in these great family wage jobs all over the country. And I think that message is beginning to resonate with bank leadership. They just need to hear it repeatedly over and over again, that we need to think differently about recruitment. And we can't just do the same old, same old. We can't sit on Indeed and wait for resumes to come in. We can't just go to the job fairs at colleges and universities and recruit. And frankly, here's another challenge. And, you know, I'm speaking candidly because I think friends tell friends the truth. Our industry is not beloved in significant corners of the economy. I know that's a shocker, but it's the truth. Bank is a four-letter word to a lot of communities around the United States. And if we're going to change that sort of philosophical reaction to our industry, we're not going to do it by reaching college-age kids. Because frankly, by the time students get to college, they've already been I don't want to say indoctrinated. I think that might be too strong, but they've been heavily exposed to a lot of anti-bank, anti-industry type of sentiment. And I'm not going to wade into what's good, bad, or otherwise as to what they've been exposed to, but just a lot of anti-bank sentiment that's out there. And so in some ways, it's kind of too late when we're recruiting from the college pool because we're recruiting from a pool that's more poised to dislike us as an industry. When we reach into career technical education classrooms in high schools, we can reach students as young as ninth grade who are really open to whatever career path might lead to the life that they would like to have. And I think that mindset needs to grow in our industry, that willingness to think differently and that willingness to truly create opportunity for those that might not otherwise have had it. Not for nothing, we're going to find that workforce is much more engaged and loyal to the industry because we provided that opportunity from the beginning.
Yes. And what's funny is I kind of fell into banking on accident while I was in college my freshman year. And it was not what I wanted to do at all. But the mentors that I had throughout the whole time I was in college, it changed my entire perspective. I tried to go into public accounting for 2 months and I hated my life. And I came back to community banking and it's just been an entirely different thing, and it is very hard. I have tried myself to shed that light of, well, do we have to have college graduates? Because all of the information, especially the niche jobs that I've done, they all vary bank to bank, but it's the same overarching umbrella of understanding that you have to have. And so all of that was given to me from my mentors. And just also because I felt valued, my own genuine curiosity of digging into, why do we have to do it like this? And so I feel like there needs to be a way to like hook those people in that wonder, why do we have to do it like this? Because to me, that's going to be what kind of pushes us into the next level of going into this new generation.
I completely agree. And here's my big, hairy, audacious goal, if you will. So to your point, Lindsay, you just said the magic word, right? Accidental banker. If you were to ask any average banker convention, from the ABA convention all the way down to the smallest state association convention, ask the room of attendees, how many of you are accidental bankers in this room? Rough percentage of hands that are going to go up, it's going to be somewhere north of 80%, right? 8 in 10 at least are going to raise their hands today. Here's our vision. At the WBA and in all of our workforce development work, in 30 years, after beating this drum, after making this, you know, kind of our life's work. My predecessor at the WBA did 41 years. I'm 12 years in, so I need to do 30 more to hit 42 so I can beat her. Love you, Liz. But I have, I've got 30 years ahead of me. So in 30 years, beating this drum all along, we're going to ask that same question to that same audience. But instead of 80% raising their hands as accidental bankers, they're going to look at each other in confusion. And they're going to say, what do you mean accidental? I've been doing this on purpose since high school. That's the vision. And not for nothing, but that room that we ask the question to will be the most diverse room of bank leadership in the history of our industry, because that's the natural side effect, right? You know, there's a lot of emphasis in the workforce today on DEI, but I think that's the wrong order. I think that when we start with diversity and equity, we miss the most powerful element in that initialism, which is the I, inclusion. When you do inclusion well, the D and the E are natural consequences. They happen as a result of making the inclusive argument meaningful and relevant. When you do inclusion well, the D and the I follow naturally along. So that's our focus, is really creating a truly inclusive banking industry. And I think that's the workforce of the future.
And just because I've sat on the other side of so many committee meetings of how do we diversify our work group, but the fact that you're starting out with inclusion from the jump, that all makes sense. Like, I think that's such great advice. And I really, really do hope that in 30 years that banking as a whole across the board can see such a shift. Because I know that is, I'm getting chills. It's just a huge passion. And I have several leaders that have really tried to champion it. And it is a hard hurdle to jump and navigate. And I feel like there are so many people now that are stepping into leadership that are ready to take it on. But the question is always, how do we start? And I think that is great, is looking at things to just start with inclusion.
I appreciate that. And for me, this is a very personal mission. There was not anything predestined about my pathway into this great business. I grew up in a very poor neighborhood. My mom was a single mom until I was five. And then she married my stepdad, who's a monster who will die in prison, which is where he belongs. And then she went back to being a single mom when I was 15. If you look at the trajectory of my story and where I have been able to come today, the central theme and the key to my success has been amazing coaches and mentors and those who saw in me as a young person, you know, a scared, angry kid, and said, you know what, if we can reach through all of this, you know, junk, all this baggage that this guy has, maybe there's something there that could be, you know, productive and constructive and contribute to our community and society. And if it weren't for those people along the way who were, you know, giving me a hand up, pulling me along, telling me to stop being a knucklehead and get my act together, I absolutely wouldn't be here today. And I mean that in the literal sense and certainly in the career sense too. And so I'm very fortunate in so many ways. And to me, that good fortune means nothing if I don't turn around and invest it in creating that pathway for those who come behind me. And that's the privilege and joy of doing this work, is that the association has seen that and said, yeah, we're all in. Our board of directors has been phenomenally supportive. And everywhere that we tell the story, the same story that I just told you about that future vision, that 30-year timeline, the reaction is the same. Yes, you know, how can we sign up? What can we do to support it? And that tells me that the industry does want this, that the leadership in our industry recognize the need. And they see that this story could be told in the way that we've described. We just have to work really hard to get there.
Yes, I fully agree. I do think it's obtainable. I think that it's there. I just, like you said, I think it just needs to continue to be said again and again. But yeah, it's such a, I don't know. I just get so excited because I've always been passionate about banking, especially community banking. It literally changed my life. And then being able to see what the places that, even where I grew up, like, it was always, oh, the bank sponsored this, like the bank did this, like the bank is here doing this, and the opportunity they've got a scholarship fund, like they have just done so much just in my tiny rural West Tennessee area that I live in. So I know that widespread across the nation, that's how community banks function. And especially now that I've been able to work with banks across the country, that's what we're doing all the time. And so I really am so excited about the future of banking. And I do hope that we can start getting people, kids ready to come and work and say, I want to grow up and be a banker. I want to grow up and I want to help people. And that first thought is, oh, banking. Because I do feel like that's the core of a lot of our community banks.
I couldn't agree more. And when you look at the impact that community banks have, right, we walk, it's so easy for us to take for granted the impact and what community banks really, truly do. But I like to describe it when I teach about the business of banking, I start by explaining it like this. And I genuinely believe this to my core. It's so much easier to tell a story when you know it's the truth. What we do is literally magic, and I could prove it. Close your eyes. All right. Now picture a bare patch of ground. All right. And on that patch of ground, you can put anything that you want, anything that you want to have, to achieve, a place you want to go, just put something on that piece of ground that you want. Now you can open your eyes. Let me ask you this. Do you have the cash in hand today to acquire or build or create that thing? Yeah, me neither, right? But what we do in our business of banking is you walk in the door of our institution or you sit down at the online application and you've got that picture in your mind and you fill out the application, you have the conversation and you get the finances to make that thing happen, not in the nebulous future, but today. We take the unknowable, nebulous future, grab it firmly and pull it forward to today through the power of access to capital. That's a magic trick, friends, and let no one tell you otherwise. And what's really cool is it's a practical kind of magic that helps us build everything around us that we see that we sometimes take for granted. And we walk amidst the accomplishments that our industry helps to build and create. Every time we walk in and out of a building, every time we engage with a business or acquire something that we want for our lives, whether it's something, you know, really, really important and necessary or something frivolous and just enjoyable, no matter what, well, that's all facilitated by this amazing system of banking that we have in our country. And not for nothing, but the innovations that the U.S. continually produces are facilitated dramatically by the access to capital that we have in our culture and society. And that is built on the foundation of banking. So, you know, for all the static that our industry gets, and some of it is deserved at times, right? We certainly know that the industry, like any other, is not perfect. But what we build is a better tomorrow, and we do it through the power of financial leverage today. That's magic, and no one can tell me otherwise.
Oh, I love that, Duncan. So as we wrap up, what is one piece of advice that you would like to leave our listeners with today?
I think we should be proud of our work. I think that that it's so easy to hear the negativity when situations like March 2023 happen, or certainly the Great Financial Crisis. We take some well-deserved in some cases and some undeserved in other cases flack from politicians, from stakeholders at all levels, and certainly from the general public. And that's not new. That goes back as long as the business of banking has existed. You'd have to go all the way back to the Medici family in the 1600s to really see a time where banking wasn't hated as an industry by some segments of society, right? And so when you look at the long history of the business of banking, it's easy to say, well, yeah, you know, quietly to people, I'm a banker. I think we should embrace all the positive. I think we should really live in the good that our industry does, because it's real and it's remarkable and it's notable and it's all around us all the time. And it's not just the businesses that we help to fund, or the buildings that we help to create, or the homes we help to buy. It's also the community investments that we make. It's also all of the provable, demonstrable. We can show our work when we talk about investing in community. And there are hundreds of millions of dollars every year that go into communities all across this country that come directly from banks that are invested in their local economy and the community at large. And that's really the business of banking in a nutshell, and not for nothing, but it's smart business. If we don't invest in communities, there's no business to transact. There's no commerce to facilitate, right? So our business model goes away. So when we build for tomorrow, we do a couple of really smart things. We create sustainability for our industry, and we build strong, economically resilient communities. And that's the business in a nutshell. I think we should be proud of that. And that's my advice to anybody in this industry, is stand firm and be proud of the work that you do, and know where your CRA public file is so that you can point to it when someone questions exactly what it is that your institution does. Because that's firepower right there, my friends.
It is. As a compliance nerd, please know where your CRA public file is, because you're right. It's a whole list of all the good that we're doing. Right. For sure. So thank you so much, Duncan, for talking with us today. We appreciate this so much. And for everyone else, for the rest of our listeners, that's Banking Matters.